I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Football Ramble. Bayern are through to the final where they have got Lewandowski. Hey, guys. It's Thursday, the 20th of August. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushin Hantharaja.
Lewandowski.
You know what? People have wrestled with doing this intro because they want to, you know, put a bit in and some people's names. You know, we're not pointing any fingers here. Need a bit more time. And you were massively showing off there with your pause for effect. Mm. I thought that was very well played.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, it was actually a nervous time. It was a very short, very nervous time. Phew, as it was for the people in that press conference.
Yeah.
Thomas
Müller. Yeah.
So I actually missed this at the time. But so for anyone that didn't see it, it's Thomas Müller saying they were confident because we've got Lewandowski and then no one laughs. And then he sort of like does a little kind of almost like windmill with his hands to go, come on, you're going to get the joke. Lewandowski. It's like, oh, why are you trying your new material on telly? It's Thomas Müller, do this like above a pub or something.
It's actually quite impressive because I don't know, I'm sure you'll have seen this from hanging around footballers as you do, Vish. It's quite hard to be a footballer and to say stuff and no one laugh. You know, there's always some sycophant who's like, but literally nothing.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I remember the first press conference Mourinho did as Spurs manager in the Champions League and he got a round of applause when he walked in.
Oh dear.
Which was incredible. But yeah, you're absolutely right. People laugh at like random shit Harry Redknapp says. And actually, you know, I think we should be encouraging puns.
Yeah.
And we should be encouraging people like Thomas Müller, who is a bit odd. And I think he expresses himself on the football pitch. He might not do that as much in the classroom. You know, we're all about encouraging people's creativity.
Yeah.
And he'll never make a joke again.
Well, Gary Lineker loves a pun, doesn't he? And I think actually you're completely right. This is to be encouraged. There should be like a sort of like a Tim Vine, Milton Jones like type of footballer.
Yeah.
That it's just, you know, they wheel them out for the press conferences or for the post matches and they just do it all in puns, just banging one liners.
Yeah. We should get a designated wisecracker in every team. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be him, is it? We're going to talk now properly and seriously about the Champions League semi-final. Okay, guys, just in case anyone was worried that it was going to be a pun
just
fest.
This, yeah.
But I have been quite disappointed about how everyone, because Serge Gnabry got two, and everyone went down the Serge route. Not Nabbs, not Nabbed, he nabbed two.
Serge Nabbs.
Very good.
Serge Nabbs brace, but Breece. Yeah, am I on something here?
Yeah.
Maybe if I keep saying it, Maybe if I stew in my own mess.
If only you'd stolen some brie at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I actually now feel like the audience at that Thomas Müller press conference.
Yeah.
But yes, it is Bayern Munich through to that Champions League final.
Who
to
could
face
have seen it?
PSG. I think everyone could have seen it,
yeah,
actually, Jim. I think that might be the point
it
you're making.
Yeah, even Mystic Meg.
At the start of the Champions League, I think they gave us some clues, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
The 8-2 against Barcelona.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because I feel like, obviously, in the game, you generally want the underdog to win. So it's a shame for Leon that they didn't have enough. But at the same time, I almost feel like I really, really don't want PSG to win the Champions League. And I feel like Bayern are a much more difficult prospect for them. You know, they have got effectively the sort of relentless ultimate bastard machine standing in the way of them in Bayern. Whereas with Leon, it would be probably, I'm not going to say an easier task, but a more manageable task. So, yeah, it's a shame. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm sad for Leon, but sort of like, all right, at least the final will probably be a bit more interesting now.
I think this is going to be a great final, potentially.
It is.
Leaving that aside.
But like, Jim, your point is like, it's, you know, Godzilla versus Mothra, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, to destroy this incredible beast, we need to, you know, awaken this dark enemy.
Because they're
the only one capable of destroying them.
Yeah, I
totally understand that, yeah. We were debating outside before we started recording about whether this was a... What did we go for? A pumping, didn't we? I was going to say shellacking, but Mason went pumping in the green room. You said, well, you said that the result was a pumping, and I'm inclined to agree, not least because while 3-0 doesn't stand out as, you know, being destroyed, and while Leon did have chances to take the lead and also 2-0 down as well to get back in the game, I think that makes it more of a pumping because you have that sense of hope that all teams get against big sides. And as soon as they go, I think everyone knew as soon as Memphis Depay missed that chance that Bayern were not only going to win, but they were going to win quickly as well.
Because I think when you see these games, Barcelona used to have it and they don't anymore, which we'll come on to, obviously, I'm sure, at some point. But there's kind of a frantic sense to every chance that the opposition has against them. They slice at things, they rush things, they try and do things too quickly because they know that chances are at a premium. And actually, even if they get 3 or 4 of them in a game, they still react like that, which is kind of what happened with Leon, where they've missed a chance in their own heads, before they've missed it on the pitch.
Yeah, that's spot on. I remember, you know, you being an Arsenal fan remember this, but there seemed to be a period where Arsenal would always be playing Bayern Munich, and they would snatch at everything. Yeah, absolutely. Because I suppose if you end up with knowing that you're going into the game getting 5 chances, if you miss in your head what you think is the second one, then you think, right, you know, we're actually going quite well here. We're creating space. We're creating opportunities or angles to go into. So, you know, we're fine. But Depay is probably running into that, thinking, but yeah, there's nowhere, no one near me.
Yeah.
Shit, what if this is it? What if this is the only chance we get? And he's bottled it.
On the other side as well, Lewandowski, obviously, he missed a few semi-sitters, right? But it just always felt like it wasn't, not just because he was playing in Bayern's side and, Leon were panicking. I don't know if you saw I think it was BT put out that gif of Memphis saying something like, oh, you know, he's totally calm, isn't he? And it was literally almost exactly to the moment where
he missed that chance.
Mm. And it's like, oh, God, that's one of those beautiful setups done by the social media team.
Yeah.
It's just been deployed incorrectly. Now, you said yesterday, didn't you, that you're a huge Memphis fan?
I am, yeah. He's he was, you know, quite disappointing at Manchester United. And there's the story that's been doing the rounds recently about how Rooney took him to one side and said he needed to be less flash, you know, just so he could, just almost to kind of earn that opportunity to be a big player rather than assuming he was already a big player because he was at a big club. And I think he got dropped to a reserve team game and he rocked up in a cowboy hat and
a leather jacket.
Yeah, leather jacket and a really flash car. And I think that's kind of slightly overblown because, I mean, what car do you turn up in when you're going to a reserve game? But do you rent out a Ford Fiesta?
It's a lot more wanky to go and get hold of an entirely independent car that you don't already own to go to a reserve game.
And rock up in like a clown car to seem not you. I don't know.
A penny farther.
Little
yeah.
Fiesta. Borrow Vicious Honda Jazz, you know.
Yeah, well, leave the Honda Jazz alone, right?
That would be probably the perfect car, though, to show that you're humble.
A respectful car for all situations. Mm. Yeah, yeah. But I think we're probably going to talk about this with Serge Gnabry later on. But sometimes things don't work out for players, and it just so happens to be the situation and the time, and they go off somewhere else and they end up thriving, and that's exactly what happened to Memphis. Mm. Granted, you know, he had a bit of a tough game yesterday and it was taken off early in the second half.
But that is part of, I mean, I don't think that was a symptom of his play. No, it was just he's had that big injury and he's coming back from it. So he's off in the 56th minute, and also for Moussa Dembélé, who scored those crucial goals, to come on.
Yeah, yeah. But more I think just, you know, like as he walks off, obviously he's going to be disappointed. Obviously he missed a great chance, but all in all, he's had a brilliant time at Lyon, and that's absolutely no reflection of what happened at Manchester United.
No, absolutely not. Gnabry's a good example as well. You would think, you know, it seems weird that Wilf Zaha was ever at Man United, wasn't it? It didn't work out. That doesn't mean that if he gets a move elsewhere, he won't be a success. I want to briefly come back to the concept of the pumping, because I don't think we fully explored it in the way that we should. So I feel like 3-0 is the minimum for a pumping. If it's 3-1, it's not a pumping.
So you think it's scoreline? Because I would argue that it's not fully scoreline dependent.
You don't think? I feel so. How
the novice pump identifier would say, I'm looking at a scoreline of 3-0. I identify that as a pumper. Well, pumping, but
the seasoned pump identifier.
Yeah, well, I feel the pump refers to how many goals a team has pumped out of the other team's defense. So it's almost like an oil pipeline pump. I don't really understand how oil works.
Right.
But other than it ruins football. Hey.
Right.
So I feel that three is a decent pump. Two is not enough to count as a pump. Like 4-5-0, that's a pump in all day. A shellacking, I think, has got to be. I think a shellacking needs to be.
What was the 8-2 then? What was the 8-2?
The 8-2 was a decimation.
Yeah, yeah.
Even with the two.
Pillaging.
The two was like, you know, ricochet.
Made it worse a bit. In a sense. Because actually that's what I'd say about a pumping is that, you know, sometimes the fact that the other side got some goals or a goal, it makes it almost a bit more uncomfortable.
It's quite patronising, that, isn't it?
Well, you got two,
didn't you?
We let you have a couple.
Yeah, well done your two.
And then
we
brought on
eight.
One of your own players to replace those goals.
Good Lord. It's brutal. Nice to know Tottenham are better than Barcelona. That's all I'm taking from that. Let's talk about Serge Gnabry. I think it's a really interesting point you make as well. Just generally this narrative. There's a big narrative in football about, and it's understandable. You follow the careers of some players and you say, Arsenal, let them go. Bunch of knobs.
Yeah, it was actually the timing. There's another good example of timing there because
I was not making that argument. By the way, I wasn't calling Arsenal a bunch of knobs.
No,
I mean you literally did.
Saying I was while grinning and looking me in the eye.
I was quoting a theoretical person.
Yourself from the past, perhaps.
The point I was going to make is that, you know, we had all this stuff with Choupo-Moting as well with Stoke. It doesn't actually, I mean, it creates a narrative that we can talk about and it's all fun about West Brom, but...
Yeah, the Tony Pulis tweets are out every time, aren't they? Every time Gnabry does something good, which is constant. As I remember it, my memory is very unreliable, Gnabry had just started to play in the first team and come on, and I think he scored a winner, I forget who against, but Arsenal were on the up. It was one of those points in the season where it's like, are they actually going to do something, not fall away? No, they're going to fall away. But he'd started to look like he was going to actually make a regular impact. Then he got an injury at a really bad time. I think it was quite a bad one as well. So he was out for a while, was getting back up to fitness, had the famous loan to West Brom, didn't quite work out. And at that point, his contract was running down. You know, there were other players ahead of him in the team, and it just seemed, I think Arsenal wanted to keep him, but he just wanted to play. So it was just, it wasn't quite as straightforward as like, we don't need him, let's sell him for like very little money. But, you know, it's a timing thing, isn't it? It's just how it goes. Like, you know, was there talk of Lewandowski being offered around
to Blackburn?
Yeah, that's right. Blackburn seem to be at the centre of a lot of these. Like, we don't need Zidane, we've got Tim Sherwood sort of situations. But it's just how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, Roberto Carlos nearly went to Villa. Would that have... You know, would he have been the same player if he had? Would he have had the same career trajectory? Almost certainly not.
Would he have been better? Is the question we need to ask.
That's a great question, Mish.
The Gnabry thing is really interesting because I think if you look at how his youth career panned out, he moved around quite a lot. I think his dad was obviously, you know, naturally a big influence on on his ambition, really. So he ended up kind of like, probably hard to say he was hawking him around, but I think he always felt his son was going to make it, so he was kind of pushing him to join different clubs. Yeah. I think he had something like 10 different youth clubs before he eventually came to Arsenal from Stuttgart, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then when he was at Arsenal, obviously things weren't working out. And Wenger, interestingly, at the end of 2019, was talking about Gnabry and the situation around why he left. And I don't know if he was just being a bit cheeky here, but Wenger suggested basically that Bayern had something to do with it.
Right.
That Bayern had got into a situation with Werder Bremen and basically said, look, if you take him off them, we're quite interested to buy him off you, and then you know, and go like that. So if you look at how Bayern actually signed him, he was only at Werder Bremen for one season. They signed him for €8 million or something like that. Astonishing.
£5 million.
And then he went to Hoffenheim to continue his development as a youth player, and then they recalled him early, I think, for the start of one season, maybe because of injury, but also because, well, you know, they figured he was oven ready now. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, he's clearly an incredibly ambitious player, and you know, while we also talk about the situation not being right for him, sometimes that is a massive kick up the arse for a young player who feels he's owed something. And you can go one of two ways, can't you? You can be bitter about it and resent that situation, or you can think, right, what do I need to do? How do I need to improve? What facets of my game do I need to take to a different level? And he has taken all of them to a different level. Mm. The great thing about that first goal, I thought, was not just what he did, but when your right winger, who's right-footed, gets the ball in that situation, and you're a striker who scored 50-plus goals that season, you think your first instinct would be to go into the box for the cross, yeah? And Lewandowski thought, no, he looks like he's on one, and he's going to cut inside and do something. Mm. And so I will be the distraction.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks volumes for the high regard that Gnabry is held in, and also just where he is as a player now. He's genuinely a world-class player. And I know people might hear me saying that and think I'm late to the party, but we all come to that realisation over different players at different times. And yesterday it was just, phenomenal.
I think we might actually see more of this because it's quite normal for young players. There's almost a circuit for young players now, isn't there? I read a bit in a piece in The Athletic recently about Phil Foden. How about before he was with City, basically when he was too young to sign contracts, a lot of the really, really good players, they'll train with City one night, Liverpool another night, and they'll go all over the local areas and sometimes even go abroad. And that is just part of the kind of pathway now. So I think we're even seeing it with a point where, you know, for years we lamented the fact that English players didn't go abroad, and younger English players seem to just think nothing of that now, and that's really, really good. And I think that is we're going to see more of these stories.
Yeah, just while we're talking about it, I think it is something that has a little bit of a, there's quite a dark tinge to that. I know couple of agents really well, and when they, you know, regardless of what you think of agents, when they tell me some stories about like how parents are, like one guy I know who's got a very talented player up in the north, and he was talking about all the basic issues that he has to overcome with parents kind of wanting to rip a player out of an academy and throw him into another one, and kind of walking about, and then other agents coming and circling over players who are only, you know, like 13, 14 years old, some even younger than that. So it can be, you know, this is a good story, but hopefully it's not a story that would encourage more people to move about and more people to think, right, we can just play around with these kids' lives on a whim.
Okay, so Serge Gnabry, one of only four players to have been directly involved in 10-plus goals in the Champions League this season, along with Lewandowski,
of course,
Erling Haaland, and Kylian Mbappe, who he will shortly be meeting. Guys, I know you've been all on these single header, one leg affairs in the Champions League. Do we feel like that still after those two sets of Champions League semi-finals?
Well, the thing is, when we consider Lewandowski's record as well, he is two away from equaling Ronaldo's record.
Yes.
If he does do that, it would have been from two fewer games.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He's 15 goals in 9 games.
Yeah,
but then Champions League.
But then, if it's two legs, do Bayern pay more respect to Barcelona? Don't they? They don't slap them 8-2. How much it would have been different from what we've seen so far? Atletico would have been justified playing the way they did against RB Leipzig, probably.
Yes.
I mean, I quite like it in the sense that for the situation we have, I think it's perfect in the entertainment we've got.
For sure, yeah. Not in perfect circumstances, necessarily.
Yeah. do PSG get this far if it's over two legs when they've got enough time to kind of get into their own heads?
Well yeah, you do wonder about that because they've very much lost it in the second leg many, many times, haven't they? Especially that incredible night at the Nou Camp. But yeah, I wouldn't want to see it be a permanent change. Mm. I just think it's a better test of two very, very different teams very often over two legs. I mean, that game's such a good example. The Barcelona turnaround against Paris Saint-Germain and Liverpool's turnaround against Barcelona. And remember Deportivo La Coruña.
Yeah, right. Let's not forget one.
Banking Milan a long, long time ago in a similar way.
And let's not forget another major one recently.
No, I can't remember. Was there anything last year? No. Liverpool walked
nothing of value.
Yeah, yeah.
On reflection.
Because you'd think if there was a team that did something like that, anything like that, not only would they have had a good season 2019-20, but they'd probably have kept the manager as well, wouldn't
they? Yeah, or maybe they'd have had something to show for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've shot myself in the foot here. Anyway, it was a glorious, glorious night.
Because if they didn't, you'd probably make a documentary about that, wouldn't
so
you?
So yeah, it is PSG against Bayern Munich on Sunday night in the Estadio de Luz.
And I've been on about this a lot, but if Paris Saint-Germain win the Champions League, I'm going to be like the person who started the position to like get the last season of Game of Thrones remade. Like, I'm just going to try and not accept it somehow.
Null and void. Null and void.
Just going to hear a hearty evil laugh from the sky. As like the ground rises up. And
I don't know, guys. Can we not get excited about... Well, we know we're into smiles on the Football Ramble. The Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah.
Glee.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
The sight of some... beautiful forward play from players in their prime.
On the pitch,
including
the
eminently likable Neymar. Yeah.
I actually do like Neymar. Whoa! Just because he's so good. I can't help myself.
He's just so good. So do I, yeah. All right. We've created this environment where a player can literally be just, not literally, but he can be Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And he's just thought, well, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
I'm going to be a nutter.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very, very cynical about PSG, as a lot of people have, but you know, they have clearly been the two best teams since the restart, haven't they?
That's what we want to see in the final.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely spot on. I think if it is going to be pretty incredible, the kind of old versus new money in its own way is going to be fascinating. And there is almost a duty for Bayern Munich to... They will feel a duty that they are doing right, despite the fact they're the second most hated team in Germany.
Yeah.
And PSG at the same time are going to be like, well, you know, we're part of the new guard, you know, you've got to let us in. You've got to show a bit more willing. Football needs to be more open because that's kind of the angle they're probably going to push.
And the romance of it is that, as Johnny Blaine said on Twitter, not since 1998 have there been two reigning champions of leagues in the Champions League final.
Oh, wow.
Because I think the year after was Manchester United against Bayern Munich and they both finished second the season before.
Mm. Yeah, quite right. So, yeah, the romance is absolutely not dead. Speaking of romance, we're going to head to England, where the England women's team have a brand new head coach. Serena Wiegmann is the first foreign coach of the England women's team. So we're moving into a new era, and she gave her first press conference yesterday after she was announced on Friday. She is going to replace one Philip Neville in September 2021. Now, Wiegmann she's a bit of a titan, really, in the women's game. Her work with the Netherlands, that's the team that she's still with at the moment until then, and she's going to be looking after them at the Olympics, assuming they do, fingers crossed, go ahead in any like proper form. Her biggest achievement is taking them to win the Euros. They really killed England. I remember watching, I think I was in some sad little corner on my laptop in Qatar, watching the England semi-final against the Netherlands, and just... That was a pumping. That was 3-0. It was an absolute pumping. Not because of the scoreline. They were just absolutely destroyed in that game. Although, to be fair, she did have two players who were on the score sheet that day, Viv Miedema and Daniel van der Donk. Absolutely, like, incredible, incredible players. So yeah. I think this is really exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think it's important as well that we've gone back to a coach who has coached exhaustively in women's football as well. I think the... Phil Neville, I mean, you know, there are more qualified writers out there who have picked many a hole in it and have been on it from the start in terms of like how it was, a disgraceful appointment, really. And I think with Weigmann as well, you're going to get a situation where she will be more attuned to the way women's football is played, because while there are similarities, one of the main differences that England have been quite late to caught on to is the fact that play builds to a crescendo a lot more in women's football than it does in men's. And one of the criticisms of English women's football from, well, so this is a bit long, so like 10 years ago, was that it was a bit too long ball. And it was one of the issues that Hope Powell kind of had that she tried to overcome, but didn't, largely because the players that she trusted, you know, weren't of that disposition. And I think one of the great examples is someone like Jill Scott, who went from someone who would come on and be a player to target, even though she was a midfielder, who now has emerged as a real ball-playing centre midfielder. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how the progression goes, because I think now English players are a lot more technically astute as well. So we're in a situation now, very not too dissimilar to the men's, where we can start playing some quite ambitious football. And, yeah, it's a very exciting appointment.
Mm. And Neville's basically still in charge until next year, isn't
2021, so September.
It's good as a succession plan in place.
Yeah, it is, because
well,
people were starting to get a bit troubled that he might, this is a bit unkind maybe, but that he might indefinitely be in charge of England. So it is nice to have that kind of bookended now, I think. Although the question is, of course, who's going to be in charge at the Olympics of Team GB? Because Jill Ellis, the former US head coach, was linked with this job, and she could have taken them on for that, but perhaps that was part of the reason. Oh God, I really hope it's not been organised around Phil Neville's ego.
Yeah, there are very few things you can't apply that sentence to.
Maybe he'll treat it like, you know, when his wife was giving birth and he wasn't there.
Oh my God. Maybe Phil has never made me a cup of tea. Did you read that article? Extraordinary article.
No,
about.
But please tell me.
about how his wife, I think she's launching a cookbook or something, and she said, I handle, you know, the sort of, she didn't say it in exactly these terms, but like, you know, the home womanly things. Sure. And Phil, you know, he does his work. And you know, actually, I think in whatever it is, 25 years of marriage, he's never actually made me a cup of tea.
He might be really bad at it. That's one of the reasons.
She doesn't know how, but he's just not, he's got a lot on.
The last time I worked in an office, was when I stopped drinking tea, because people would offer to do the tea round and the tea was rubbish. And I can't take this anymore. I'm just going to stop drinking.
I'm going to drink 9 coffees a day.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, that's such a dreadful. Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about Phil Neville's legacy, if you like, as it all winds down. But, you know, Weigmann has said that England are closing the gap to the USA, this kind of impenetrable force. And that's the aim, isn't it? Yeah. Have they made progress over this period? The jury is out.
Well, the World Cup semi-final between England and the US was a lot closer than the scoreline suggested. You know, Ellen White had a goal ruled out for offside that would have drawn us level at 2-2. Then Steph Houghton missed as a penalty as well. And
classic English dilemma.
I know, but you know, England went toe-for-toe with the US and nearly got something out of that game. And, you know, yeah, I think that everything is there where we can catch up. The only thing is that US football, the investment, obviously up until the pandemic, has been so great and it will continue to be great. And their system is so incredible that you get the impression that we need a little bit more structural change in the UK before we're able to really catch them properly. Mm. But in terms of laying a glove on them in a major tournament, I don't think we're that far off.
I like that imagery. I think it's a good point and it will be very interesting to see. And what is also interesting is just to note a couple of the signings that Manchester City, who are a big titan in women's football and have actually backed their team a lot in a really serious way in terms of providing really good facilities for their side. And, you know, they even do stuff like on their general Twitter feed, they release the men's and the women's transfers in the same setting, which is, I don't know, personally for me, I really like it. But anyway, they've just signed US Women's National Team World Cup winning midfielder Rose Lavelle, who's an incredible player. She joins another World Cup winner who's also just signed, Sam Mewis. She said, you know, the reason I want to, previously these players would have played in the NWSL because that has been the top of the game really for the women. But she said, you know, it's all up in the air in the States at the moment. And that's why she's going to come over here. So that might lead into your point, Mish.
Yeah, I mean, could this be a sort of catalyst for England to become a sort of global centre, or certainly at least a European centre of women's football? And obviously, you know, it's maybe hypocritical to sort of praise City for doing in the women's game what we've criticised them for doing in the men's game. But perhaps it is a little bit different in terms of just ensuring that competition is there and, you know, just just making the UK a bit of a hub for that. And I think we'd all like to see that personally, yeah. Despite, you know, the kind of cost that comes at.
Yeah, because it's quite an interesting, the machinations behind her move, because she was at Washington Spirit and moved to OL Reign, who were owned by Leon, who took her basically playing rights. So when she returns to the NWSL, she'll play for OL Reign. And then she moved to Manchester City in the space of a week.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because so far all the players we've had over here from the US have been on essentially sabbaticals. And it's very similar. You know, I'm not a massive rugby fan, so I'll probably get this a little bit wrong. But for example, if you're an All Black, you need to play in their kind of domestic setup,
right,
to qualify. So basically to be eligible to play for a World Cup. But the first year of that 4-year cycle, they kind of encourage them to go to France often, where there isn't a salary cap, where they can go and play a different kind of rugby, earn a bit of extra money, and then come back in time to qualify. Mm. And now, obviously, Rose Lavelle said in her interviews yesterday that the reason she stayed last year was because of the Olympics, and she's kind of gearing up for that. And then she was basically giving the blessing to, actually, you know what, you might as well go now ahead of the Olympics next year. So, as you said, like if England can become a European hub, we'll only benefit from it. You get better by playing better opposition and, yeah, could see there'll obviously be an argument of them taking places of local players. But I think it's ultimately, if we improve the standard of the league, everyone's going to benefit.
They need more Joe Harts in their side. That's what they need. All right, let's get to a break, guys. Coming up, we're going to be going to the topics, of course, and we're going to sound the transfer klaxon.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Football Ramble. It's me, obviously, Jim and Vish today, and it's also this man. It's time for the topics.
We concentrate on the topics. We're pretty good to many topics today.
No dancing this time, guys. I hope you're feeling good about that.
You had to hold yourself back though, didn't you?
I had a little dance.
It was so tiny,
I don't think either of you saw it.
Was it the hand jive?
It was a bit more of I just moved my shoulders a bit. And it was. I was just so happy to hear Daniel Farke's absurd voice.
Yes.
I just did a little jig.
Don't
tiny
call
jig.
It absurd. That's not very kind. He's so well of you.
A very kind man.
Absurd isn't necessarily bad.
Yeah.
There's beauty in absurdity.
Exactly.
Goodness. Right. Mark Bajarski, thank you for emailing in. He's got a great one. He's got a great topic. The question is about what changes would you make to food at football stadiums. I'm not surprised. Thank you so much for emailing in, guys, and tweeting and all this stuff. There are plenty of things we could do, aren't there? There are a lot of things. Here is his most beautiful suggestion. My idea to improve stadium food would be to introduce hot dog cannons that would fire individually wrapped hot dogs. I love the little individually wrapped. I mean, let's be clear about this. We don't want a naked hot dog flying at you to random fans throughout the games, not just at halftime. This is the crux of it. That way it keeps people on their toes and provides some entertainment if the football is especially poor that day.
I like that.
Guys, that's, I think, you know, let's get the patent on that, Mark.
Yeah, I think, see, one of the things I think that we could transport from American sport is the hot dog guy. The guy just going up and down the stands, going, hot dogs, get your hot dogs. But I think this is a natural evolution from that that's probably even better.
I just love the idea that you're like really focused on some intricate bit of passing and in midfield.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It'll be happening during the game, not just at half time.
Yeah. If you're a vegetarian or a vegan, it might be a bit annoying to just have a sausage thrust into your face, but
I would say meat eaters would also object to that.
True.
Have you got another topic?
I do. I have one here from Simeon Greedy, which is just well done to your parents. Fantastic name. Good work. Inspired by another listener on this week's Ramble Topics, whose idea was the conceding team buys food for the other team's supporters rather than taking a penalty, my idea is as follows. When a player gets a red card, his team has the option to keep that player on the pitch, but only once he has eaten six hot dogs as fast as possible.
It's absolutely beautiful.
Why six? Who knows? Will that player be as effective running around after six quick hot dogs? Probably not. Chaos ensues. Competitive eating, I'm not going to say it's a sport, but it's certainly
a
competition.
They say it's a sport. Yeah. So just near to Sky, there's a famous, food vendor called Man Versus Food, where they...
TV show.
Yes, exactly. Where a lot of competitive eating, it seems to occur there because they have some especially large food option that people eat very quickly, and it's extraordinary. And the I think one of the key players at the moment is a very small petite girl. There was a Channel 4 documentary about this.
Wow.
And she definitely considers it
a sport. That doesn't mean it is, though, does it?
I know, but she's the one who's top of it.
Well, so. What's she going to do? Eat you?
Yeah. Well, maybe she can. Is she like a pelican or something? They've got this massive like. Beak with like
it's
a gullet in it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a beak.
I'm nosyologist.
Between a beak and a mouth, isn't it?
Yeah,
like a jowl.
Quite scary.
Oh yeah, it just lives down there, doesn't it? Yeah. Food and it's got that stuff that
lives.
No, it has. Well, it does for a bit. Fish, you joke, but it's got like those juices that kind of start breaking up the food in the beak. So you know, like the stuff that we
really
have in our gut. I'm pretty sure this is true, but obviously, write in show at footballrambledaily.com if you are working in the field of zoology and have got anything.
Pelicanography.
Yeah. So it basically, I think it would live a little while and then it would start to be broken
down. Enzymes broken down in saliva, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Happens with humans as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
So I've got one here from Sido on Twitter. I don't care what the food is, strong start. I just think it should all come out of the cool boxes that managers like Tuchel, Bielsa and Maradona sit on. Now, we would have seen it with Thomas Tuchel with... you know, he's broken his foot, so he sat on that, for anyone who doesn't know. Bielsa sits on a bucket, though, so that's... I'm not sure about that. Don't like squash pies? Tough. You should be honoured to eat something that has been in such close proximity to Marcelo Bielsa's powerful glutes.
Yeah. Are they still, would we say?
Are they still powerful glutes? Well, he's got to squat a lot, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because he sits
a lot
on the
of
bucket.
Exercise for them.
I thought that was more about his poise and kind of posture. I thought he had a special way of doing it, you know, like a shaman.
Maybe he doesn't... I mean, he probably... If he doesn't exercise those glutes, he's going to seize up a lot from sitting like that, isn't he? So he's probably got that in. He's a thorough man, isn't he, Bielsa? So he will be exercising those glutes. I think we can.
He's never going to miss leg
stretching.
Day.
He's
nice.
Never going to miss leg day.
Every day's leg day.
He's absolutely not. I don't think the pies would necessarily be squashed.
Well, no, because the cool box is solid. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sitting on it.
Yeah.
Or maybe if it was just in the back pocket of...
warmed by the glute.
Yeah.
To get a stadium's worth of pies in there as well, you're going to have to overstuff it. So
yeah,
maybe the lid won't shut properly. I don't know.
MC Hammer pants.
Yeah. I feel like if I were to sort of have my two cents on this, I feel like for most of the game, ball boys do nothing. So what's to stop them also running a little barbecue?
Oh, yes.
Just around the pitches.
Oh, that's a lovely show.
And the people
show,
shuttling the food up and down. Then you get the hot dog, get your hot dogs guy as
and
well, which I want.
Because that's the best thing about having kids, isn't it? When people train them to like get stuff for you.
Yeah. Yes.
That is the most of the reason. That's, in fact, why humans evolved to have kids, is to get someone else to go and get stuff for you.
And so the whole stadium, all of the stadiums would smell of quite strongly of meat. And I guess like halloumi for the vegetarian. I don't know what a vegan squash in a...
Plant-based, you know, burgers, you know, there'll be different options.
But how would that work in a stadium full of men when they're supposed to be watching the football and they're just paying attention to, oh, you shouldn't turn steak. Yeah, I wouldn't do that, mate, no.
Good point. I mean, it's to be figured out, isn't it?
Well, maybe that could be a reward. Maybe that could be your reward for catching one of the hot dogs flying through the air through the hot dog cannon. You get to do next week's. So we're combining all of these now. You get to do, how many would you have? One on the halfway line for the barbecues. One there,
either side. Each section of the stand would need probably three, I suppose.
So you've got, one behind the goal as well.
Barbecues for different things. Yeah, maybe.
Bloody hell.
I think they'd be in like... barbecue pits almost. They're not going to, if the ball hits them, they're not going to fall over. They're going to be sturdy structures.
Maybe the moat from the other day would come in helpful here. The moat around the pitch, somehow on a float.
Although, what happens if, like, you know, players chasing down the ball on the byline and then often they fall into the side, the advertising boards, but they just get up and they've just got char on their forehead.
Yeah, well,
details.
It happens with a chalk on the touchline sometimes and we're all okay. Yeah. So I think we'd be able to live with it.
Oh, he's one of those wingers that gets charcoal on his boots.
Oh, guys, so much food for thought. I absolutely have loved this round of topics. Thank you so much for all your suggestions. I think basically a combination of many of the above would be the absolute dream. We're going to have a brand new question for the topics tomorrow, so do listen in and get your creative juices flowing. That sounds unpleasant. New Premier League fixtures have come out this morning at 9 o'clock. It's edge of the seat stuff.
There are loads of them. Let's move on.
Yeah,
that's my. It's always my approach to the fixtures. I just don't care.
All right, Jim.
Well, I'm upset by them.
Oh, love.
Yeah, I'm not upset by them really. It's just one of those non-stories things, isn't it?
All right. Well. You know, you've slightly shot my little section.
Well,
here
you can still do it. I'm just putting out my feelings on it.
My notes say all teams play each other twice.
Well,
home
there you
and
go.
Away. No.
That's the crux of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the same.
You know what? If that wasn't the case, then I'd be interested.
Yes.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Oh, if one random team didn't have the chance to play everyone twice.
Yeah. Or there was like a...
Well, like maybe that's the... Maybe Liverpool, whoever wins the title, not allowed.
Get a game
season.
Off.
Yeah. Not a walk, not a bye. Like, you don't win it. You get no points for
it. Yeah. It just makes it a bit harder for you.
Level things up. Oof, I'm still in the topic space here right now, aren't I?
Yeah.
All right, look, fine. But let's talk about transfers. But the only... I would say the opening weekend, the best one, if you like, to note, is Liverpool-Leeds, I reckon. And then the first derby is going to be... So that's the 12th of... September, when is the first weekend of the Premier League. Gosh, it's only been a little while, hasn't it? And then 17th of October, the first derby, Everton-Liverpool, Manchester United versus Leeds is in early December. Let's get on to some glorious transfer rumours before Jim pops with excitement, perhaps. All right, then. Now, we have made this week something of a Barcelona tribute thread, the old... I mean, you know, Marcus can't be with us today, but he is remembered because, don't worry, we need to talk about Ronald Koeman's plans.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's me rubbing my hands together. Because how glorious was it to see those suggestions trickle out on social media in various places yesterday? He's reportedly given three names to the Barca board for the summer. Donny van der Beek, Memphis Depay.
Yeah, so far so reasonable.
Michael Keane.
Now,
you may think that's the end of the intrigue here, but actually, Michael Keane, the reason they need him is because he's going to be a replacement for Gerard Piqué, who is going to go, audaciously, Fulham have now put their 2 cents in. That's where he's off to.
Do you ever feel like you're in a dream?
All the time.
Yeah. I currently feel like I'm in one of Marcus's dreams. Like we're just background characters in it.
Yeah. Sorry, I've just kicked over my water. It's going everywhere.
Too much excitement.
Yeah, yeah. I do. Well, and luckily, it's only a dream, so we don't have to clear that
up. Yeah, it's fine.
When I saw those names, it felt a little bit like, as an older brother, when I used to go out and play with my mates, and I'd be out the door, and my mum would turn to me and say, "Can you take your little brother with you?"
Mm.
And I used to think it was really embarrassing, and this is, Michael Keane is the little brother of the Donny van der Beek, Memphis Depay situation. I mean, this is probably the point where we say that, you know, he has shown flashes of being a very good, a very capable defender, yeah. And we should also probably point out that defending for Barcelona requires a very different skill set to defending for Everton. Mm-hmm. So, for his sake, I'm happy for him, I'd yeah. say. I'm happy for a player who was clearly struggling when he made that move, and there was a lot of big raps on him. And, you know, certainly for England, there was a situation where he'd be called up into squads and people would be like, why? He's playing like a drone.
Yeah.
But if this does come off, if he does get this move, if it is true, then, I mean, fair play to him, because it's a hell of a place to go and play football.
Yeah, and also, isn't it, it's nice to see that clearly Ronald Koeman has an affinity with him and so much faith in him, even after, you know, even now it's been a while since he was at Everton. Maybe he sees something in him that would suit what he's got planned for Barcelona, or would suit La Liga. And I hope it happens. Like, a lot of people are just sort of dismissing it as something just slightly bizarre and unexpected. But I'd love to see how that particular story would play out. I mean, you know, it'd be huge. Go off to Barcelona and play with Martin Braithwaite. It'd be a hell of a thing. So Barcelona, if other reports are to be believed, other than about seven players, the entire squad is up for sale, isn't it? Which which cannot be true.
Absurdly, just, except for the one that really they should probably think about, which is Messi.
You think they it would be in Barcelona's interest to move him on?
Well, he's the only one they could actually sell, probably. So if they're being reasonable about this, you know, a lot of the other people are older.
Yeah, they're going to struggle to get big fees for most of those players.
If they need the money, which it seems as though they do, then that's your cash cow.
Cash cow. Imagine 10 years ago thinking, as this, you know, little bloke was thrilling the world on his way to scoring 8 million goals, he'd be referred to later on as a cash cow.
Yeah, a cash cow to raise funds for Michael Keane. What? This is definitely one of Marcus's dreams.
Well, Marcus has dreamed up Gerard Piqué. I actually think he would fit in quite well. Shakira, I mean, there's some lovely places she could go to down Fulham way. I think that's quite an elegant swap for her.
They probably
anyway.
I'm not being facetious there. They probably know the area really well. And there's probably a lot of London that they love, and it would be concentrated towards that part of West London, no doubt.
I think, is it the case that Fulham have just declared their intentions early? Like, surely PK will have a lot of suitors.
Well, guys, I don't know, because, to be honest, the source of this story is not one I traditionally get my transfer.
Is it Marcus?
Would it be the equivalent if Marcus declared his interest in Shakira?
It's a Peruvian website called Libero. It's not one I traditionally go to. It's not a go-to source for me personally, but I'm not like the oracle of transfers, so perhaps that's where,
change your tune, haven't you?
That's where, you know, all the lads get them.
This is the fun of transfer rumours, though, isn't it? It's just they just sort of come out of nowhere, and largely they are essentially tabloid nonsense, but we can all just take a little speculative trip down Speculation Street and enjoy them. I feel that we've spoken about Donny van der Beek and haven't... I feel generally football hasn't spent enough time talking about just what wonderful name that is. Donny from the family of Beek. That translates as, roughly... It's great. More of it, please.
He looks and sounds like someone out of Dawson's Creek, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Dawson's Beak.
Yeah.
As it's known.
God.
Dawson's van der Beek.
I apologise.
As it's known in the Netherlands. All right, some things that have actually happened as we edge our way towards the exits here. Dean Henderson has confirmed he's not going to be extending his loan at Sheffield United for a third season. Winning promotion to the Premier League with my brothers and having the season we had this season is something I will never forget. I'm not sure the copyright has had too much of a glance at that. But anyway, Dean Henderson is presumably looking to challenge old David De Gea for the number one shirt. And as a result of that, Sheffield United have re-signed Aaron Ramsdale from Bournemouth for £18.5 £1 million. I mean, two decent and exciting goalkeepers.
Yeah.
David De Gea says he's not worried.
Yeah, I feel like Henderson should be going in there as number one. Maybe not in terms of squad number.
Presumably he's been given something like that.
What do you think, Vish? How do you feel about De Gea? Because surely you want a bit more of a solid option, and Henderson seems to be providing that, potentially.
Yeah, we definitely need more of a solid option, but I still am of a mind that David De Gea can still be that solid option. I think they've invested quite a lot in him, and there is a lot of certainly goodwill behind closed doors to suggest that they would want him. They want to give him every opportunity to, you know, rediscover the player he once was. And maybe that happens because he has someone like Henderson who becomes a very real threat. Because yeah. I think one of the things that with Sergio Romero, through getting those, through getting those cup matches and playing in the Europa League, he elevated himself to being talked of as an excellent number two. And one of the things that seemed to allay De Gea's fears is the fact that he was always referred to as the best number two. And so therefore, you know, having someone in who is going to be a legitimate threat to him might light a bit more of a fire under him and help make him cut out those mistakes.
Before we go, it's now time for Betway's Bet Your Way. We have selected a bet for tomorrow's Europa League final using their Bet Your Way feature, and we've gone for a cracker. It is Romelu Lukaku to score two or more goals and Inter to lift the trophy. It's at 9-1. £10 on that, therefore, returns £100, including stake. Listen to tomorrow's preview show for our selection for the Champions League final with Betway. 18+, gamble responsibly. For more information, head to begambleaware.org. Guys, that is pretty much all we've got time for, because we were hoping to do an entire part on Sven-Goran Eriksson, who has been linked with the Jamaica job. But unfortunately, the Jamaican FA have denied it. More on that as we get it, I guess.
Yeah.
2020, you keep taking from us.
Indeed. Strange turn of events. Very strange turn of events. But, you know, you can't keep a good Sven down, so we'll see.
43 years and counting his managerial career.
Wow.
What could have been? He always said he wanted to retire to the Caribbean. All right. Tomorrow's show, guys. I'm back. Luke and Andy are in as well. Oh my good Dion.
You've just realised what that means.
Luke's. Yeah. Game. Right, guys.
It's coming.
Do you feel like you're about to play Bayern?
And I'm not Leon. I am. Who am I?
Spurs.
Well, this has been a delight,
hasn't
Jim.
It?
Nice to see you, mate.
Yeah, you too.
Catch you next week. Take care, Vish. See you soon.
You too. All the very best tomorrow.
Thank you. I may not be back, even though it says I will. Take care, guys.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.